friends, you're listening to Irish Radio Network, USA. Let us go to Ireland and, in fact, hook up and link up with a fellow Mayo man. His name is Michael Murphy. He's a native of Castlebar in County Mayo. He's a psychoanalyst with a busy practice in Dublin, and he's an award-winning senior television producer, director, and newscaster, and has been such for the past 43 years, and just recently retired as a newscaster. Let me welcome, first of all, Michael Murphy to our program. Hello, Michael.
Hello, Adrian. It's lovely to talk to you.
You know, many, many people who are here would of course, unless they were against the medium of television, would say, I wonder if that's the same Michael Murphy, who indeed was a broadcaster, a newsreader. They wouldn't know much about the psychoanalyst part, but you're a fixture and have been on television, you know, for no more than myself, for a long, long time. Tell us what got you into the television and got you into broadcasting to begin with.
Well, I always knew I had a good voice, Adrian. I had taken part in various school operas and amateur broadcasts when I was going through secondary school.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I finished the degree, it was a degree in psychoanalysis, I was over in France, came back to Ireland, and there were no jobs.
Mm.
So they advertised for a continuity announcer on radio, and I applied, and after various tests, I was accepted and trained, and that started me off on the career in television, radio, until I started in radio, and then eventually moved after about 2 years onto television to read the news on both radio and television.
Right.
In Irish and English, actually, Adrian.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Well, don't take me on with the Gaelic, even though, even though down the road from Castlebar, in Attie Mass outside Ballinagh, I learned we were taught everything, all subjects, Oscailge.
Oscailge, my goodness, so wonderful.
Yeah.
Well, it's wonderful to have that in the background.
It is, and the fact that I can't add three numbers today without double-checking myself, Oscailge is beside the point. Did you have?
I think Irish people actually think through Gaelic anyway. You know.
Yeah. We can't help it.
Can't help it. Yeah.
Tell me though a little bit about you as a psychoanalyst, and in fact, for those who are around Cork on a Thursday. You actually travel from Dublin to Cork on a Thursday. Tell us about that.
There's an afternoon show that goes out on RTE, the national broadcaster,
yes.
Between 4 and 6 o'clock, and it's presented by Maura Duran and Dáithí O'Shea.
Mm-hmm.
And every Thursday afternoon, they have a psychoanalytic slot. In other words, I go down there, go live on air, and people would send in their texts with whatever problem it might be to do with anxiety or depression, and I answer those questions live on air.
Uh-huh.
So it's a bit of a challenge because you have to get the theory out of the head and into English that people can understand, and be sensitive to the fact that you're only getting a few lines, you don't know the background completely, you know. It helps people.
Now, that brings us to a subject and a topic, though, particularly in the area that you are expert in, and that is, it takes a long time to do a psychoanalysis. It's a study, and there's no rule book, there's no textbook that gives you the answer to very clinical questions. Yes, how does
I
that take, work?
Yeah. Well, I take that point, Adrian, very much so. But what you're doing is you're listening to the language. You're listening to what they're saying. And people reveal themselves very much in what they're saying. And if you're trained in listening, you can pick up exactly what's wrong. In other words, often at the end of maybe a first interview with somebody, I'd know exactly what the problem is. But I wouldn't go in. They have constructed a wall to protect themselves. And it would be wrong of me to go in and pull out the nub of the neurosis, as it were.
Right.
So I take that down brick by brick over time, because it's now beginning to imprison them rather than keeping them safe, you know.
Now, would the fact that people would call, that somebody would call into a radio show with a question that obviously has, it's not the question of the hour or the day, this is something obviously that has been gnawing at them for some time, does that denote a sense of depression, generally speaking? Is that depression? Could it be another? Could it be some other emotion?
It could be, but what I would look on that as they're actually reaching out, and it might be the first time they have reached out to somebody else.
Yeah,
and hopefully when they've reached out to the television program, that they'd be able to go maybe talk to a friend or a doctor after that, and maybe take it further and do something about it, you know.
In rural Ireland in particular, how available is our mental health practitioners? How easy is it to actually... you know, to find out somebody locally, or is there a tendency not to to attend, say, in the country? Maybe you wouldn't want to have somebody in the local town or the local area. How does that work?
Oh, I think that's a very good point. Generally, in all the major towns, of course, there would be facilities there, but they might not want to go to some place where they would be known. So they'd often travel a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, Castlebar people might go up to Ballina.
Right.
You know, people from Ahimas might come down. And, you know, that is true. But there is a great deal of isolation still in rural Ireland, I must say. But hopefully it's improving, and the neighbourhood watch, people keep an eye out for each other and bring people to the various places they need to go to, you know.
Is it fair when many ethnics, multi-ethnics, and this is not peculiar to the United States, but worldwide, might... and be inclined to react to somebody, particularly in the season that's coming up, St. Patrick's Day, and may think that it's quite okay to say, sure, and begar, I'm a great drinker myself, that type of, and I'm taking the worst case scenario. Is that something that that's more associated and affiliated with immigrants?
I think it probably is. We celebrated St. Patrick's Day differently, I think, in Ireland. The major parade, of course, is in Dublin. The president reviews it. And so it's more a family celebration, as it were.
Yeah.
Certainly, I would think so.
I'm just thinking, though, that, you know, many who tie in our reputation for being jovial, you know, with a reputation of, you know, enjoying a drink. I don't think there's any malice in that kind of approach, but it seems like it rubs many of us the wrong way.
I think it does. I remember the film Postcards from the Edge, and Meryl Streep calls up to I forget her name now, who the actress was, yeah. But says gives out to her for drinking, and she says, I just drink like an Irish person.
Mm.
So Shirley MacLaine it was, actually.
Yeah, okay.
And, you know, yeah. So it's there in the language and in people's psyche, and it like all stereotypes, it's
yeah.
true and not true at the same time, you know.
You're... As an author, as a poet, as somebody who has a tremendous knack in mixing humor, the Michael Murphy that we know could either make you laugh or cry or both. What is it that's in you? And how closely is it related to your career that's expressed in your books and in your poetry?
Well, reading the news is a very formal discipline, and you're following a script. Whereas when you're writing and able to freely express yourself, it's something that had been dammed up for years.
Right.
What happened, actually, Adrian, I was hit with prostate cancer about 8 years ago, and I thought I was going to die, so I asked to have the laptop in, and I wanted to leave some record. So I wrote a memoir called At 5 in the Afternoon, and President
right.
Harry Robinson wrote the intro to that. And that actually started me off on the free-flowing speech that actually... All Irish men, or most Irish people have, they're able to
yeah.
express themselves very well, you know. So that started the process, and then I wrote a poetry book, then another autobiography,
yeah.
and then a second poetry book. So there are four books out at the moment.
Now, the sequel to At 5 in the Afternoon is The House of Pure...
The Pure Being.
A
right.
Pure Being. From your prose to poetry, was that a progression, or were you mixing and matching?
I had always written poetry, Adrian.
Yeah.
I had always written poetry, and but it wasn't ever good enough to publish. And so I had continued on over the years, and finally got the best of them together and put them out in the first 25 poems in a book called The Republic of Love.
Yes.
So that was the start in the poetry stakes.
Yeah, I'm looking at your books as we're speaking.
Oh my goodness.
Here.
Yeah.
But on your battle with male cancer,
yes.
Probably in the reviews and actually everything you have written has been very have been loved by critics. There's hardly anything. Do you feel yourself that this is something that has been helped by your own career as a psychoanalyst?
Oh, it has. It gives you a great understanding of human nature, Adrian, you know,
yeah.
and that's, you can write about that in the books. And
yeah.
I'm a broadcast journalist, so what I write is meant to be spoken, and that
mm-hmm.
accounts for the poetic quality, the lyrical quality
yeah.
that I make in the writing, you know.
You know, I can't, even though you're coming here, which is why we wanted to get you on this weekend, you are coming to the Irish Arts Centre. We'll fill that in a few minutes from now, but we can hardly... speak and think about Ireland without, you know, thinking of some of the taboo subjects which were thus, one being, of course, the Irish famine and the survivor guilt that would follow that. Another might well be... you know, we only have to go back 100 years to, again, on this, the centenary of the formation of the Irish government. There are, and I would say, even for myself, it would appear that topics, part of our history having to do with the famine, was only barely covered in our primary education and, in fact, the rising, the 1916 rising, would have to be intentionally kind of left there for primary school. That is something that was left when you went on to high school or when you went on to college or something. Some of that had to do with the fact that, you know, the rising was actually still raw. If you, you know, go back to,
yes,
you know, through the 40s and the 50s, and I was long gone out of Ireland before, you know, it became a topic of conversation. And in fact, many might say that it was from our side of the Atlantic that the topic, particularly of, again, the famine and the great hunger, that more was done here than in Ireland. And again, you know, going back to your day job, is that something that still is hanging in there? Or I'm only assuming that, in fact, that there is a connection in the first place.
I would endorse what you're saying, Adrian. When I was at school, I think it's probably a little later than you, we did not cover 1916 and the rising. It was left in limbo.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we were so traumatized by the great hunger. I grew up in Castlebar, which mm-hmm. was Lord Lucan's territory.
Yep.
And he cleared the land of people who couldn't afford to pay their rent when the crops failed. So they died on the roadsides.
Mm-hmm.
And he employed thugs who actually broke down their houses
mm-hmm.
and cleared his land so that it was decimated of people. Over half the population of Mayo, for example, emigrated or died.
Yeah.
And it was so traumatic that it was never spoken about until the famine memorial started in the United
yeah.
States, and that influence came back, and now they have a famine memorial at the bottom of the Reek, Kirkpatrick.
Absolutely, yes.
In Mayo, you know.
Yeah.
But certainly again in 1916, it was not taught in schools because it was within living memory.
Mm-hmm.
My grandfather happened to be in Dublin doing business at the time the rising broke out, and he was trapped there, and they used to go up to the railway station to see would a train come down from Dublin, and of course in those days there weren't telephones, and
right.
people were really worried about what happened. So again, maybe it was just too near to give an objective eye to
yeah.
see what had actually happened.
Too close to the bone, yeah.
yeah.
Now, you're coming, not only are you coming here, and again to the Irish Arts Centre, but you're coming and you're bringing some of your friends.
I am. My colleagues from the newsroom in RTE, Eileen Dunn, who's still reading the news, Eamon Lawler and Emer O'Kelly, we were all newscasters together. And when I was a producer-director in RTE, I had a wonderful award-winning presenter called Sienna Campbell,
yes.
who hails from Swinford in County Mayo. So we're all coming, and what we're doing is I have constructed a show out of my two poetry books and two works of prose, and it's called Stories, Poetry and Dreams, and it reflects the modern Ireland. It's not the Ireland of Brooklyn with, you know, that
yeah.
film with Saoirse Ronan. It's bang up to date, and we talk about what concerns Irish people and tell a story with humor, and especially overcoming vicissitudes and troubles. There's a theme of the cancer going through and how people, various other people, survive it.
Right.
I tell their stories.
You know, I I want to return to that, but what I need, you know, you to address even very briefly is the reality that we on our side are in denial, and that is the very high rate of suicide in Ireland, and indeed many who avoid their suicide and come to the United States, perhaps to look for the, excuse me, but the cure. There is no cure here as we see it, but is that, as a psychoanalyst, is that exaggerated to, what does that have to do with? First of all, is that true about Ireland? Because we keep hearing different statistics on the rate of suicide in Ireland.
Well, there are two parts to that suicide question. First of all, youth suicide, young people around the age of 20 and under, that is extremely high in Ireland. And the second thing I'd say, because of the downturn that the whole world experienced, particularly around 2007-2008, a lot of people who had made a great deal of money during the boom times,
yes,
when that was suddenly taken away from them, they seem to have lost their self-worth. So there was a rash of suicides at that time. And it's a huge sadness because it affected people, right of families, right around the country, and those who knew them. I'm sure there isn't a family who hasn't been touched by the suicide of somebody they knew. So again, you're right. It has really haunted the country and still does.
I want to come back to your trip and to your trip here. It's an exciting introduction indeed to people we know, and for the, particularly those who came from Ireland recently, in
yes,
that you have this click, as it were, you know, of news readers, of news people, you know, who are putting on a show, and
yes,
that this is based on, you know, again, your poetry and your prose and your dreams. Did you have to kind of whip them all into shape there, or was this something you were doing around the coffee table or the pub, or how did you all get together?
We had remained friends throughout our years in the newsroom and beyond. We would meet regularly, maybe once every 3 months or something like that.
Yeah.
And I decided to construct a show out of my what I had written, because, as I say, I'm a broadcast journalist, so what I had
yeah,
written was meant to be heard. And I suddenly constructed this show performance, and we went around the country, and we did 9 various venues, from Ennis through Athlone, Cork, Dublin. We hit all of those, the
yeah,
main centres, and it got a great response altogether.
Mm-hmm.
And so we decided again, let's do it again this year, but I had to reimagine the whole show for New York. And so we actually had a rehearsal last Saturday
yeah,
here in my home, and we have a tryout in Cork on Saturday the 12th of March, and then we head for the States on Monday, and we'll be there in the Irish Arts Centre on the Tuesday and Wednesday.
Before
Patrick's Day.
Yes. There's one in your writings. We can hold this for the Irish Arts Centre for when you come here. But it's an email to ISIS by
right,
Michael Murphy. And it is, of course, from one of your books, The Chaplet of Roses.
Roses.
Now, 24 poems. Is this something where did you come up with that, or what was it? And was this something that hit in the middle of the night, that you know, sending an email and creating poetry and prose to ISIS? I mean, you wouldn't have much competition now in that area. But what, you know, what sparked that, Michael Murphy?
Well, we had all been horrified at what happened to the land of the free and the home of the brave at 9/11. We all became Americans at that time. And suddenly there was this attack then in Paris when 138 souls were murdered. And I said, really, something has to be done about this. And I started off an email to ISIS, and it turned into a poem. Mm. And it was really heartfelt. I really consider it an insanity, really, people who have done such unspeakable things. So in the poem, I talk about that, and it is part of the show, actually. I do it with Sienna Campbell. When you have four or five iconic voices together, you're able to do duets and trios and quartets, hand the lines around, and it has a huge emotional impact. And particularly a poem like that, Email to ISIS, where I think the nub of it is I read a very short section there about they talk about if women bring children to school, they must have a male chaperone, otherwise you throw them off the highest building in the name of Allah, the Most Merciful. Since for you women are less than men, you blank them with burqas, negating their existence, confining them behind closed doors. I think that is at the root, that blanking of women, of the feminine side of their nature, that's at the root of what makes them so evil.
Many of us who think of ISIS and the evil, associated with that, the unspeakable evil, we are inclined to think of male Cromwellian type characters. We don't bring ourselves as far as saying, you know, ISIS, also they have families, they belong to families, and as such, it's an area that we wouldn't want to give much thought to, because we are so overcome by the evil actions of ISIS that it's almost like, you know, they were born under a rock, they're this, you know, bunch of hooligans who go around. It's very hard to, you know, to imagine that ISIS does include and incorporate families and brothers.
I'm sure their mothers and fathers are absolutely horrified by how their children have turned out. They tried to give them a better life, maybe in Europe or in the United States, and then they turn around and do these dreadful deeds, you know.
That's part of your program, but also I can't help but wonder if you and your colleagues who have been very disciplined in the area of news and news reading, do you let your hair down when you...
we do indeed, and it's great to hear some of them speak in Spanish accents, and Eamon Lawler in particular is able to take off the various counties in Ireland and do the various accents, be it from Kerry or from Mayo or from Donegal, and it's great to hear that.
It's a new show, and it is based on your writings. And we look forward to seeing you and greeting you while you're here. My guest, friends, is the best-selling author, Michael Murphy, a native of my own county, of Mayo, and psychoanalyst, again, television producer, director, and a newscaster. for 43 years with RTE. And the event itself is the Irish Arts Centre, and that is on the 15th, March 15th and 16th, and that will take place at 7:30 in the evening, the Irish Arts Centre, at on West 51st Street between 10th and 11th Avenue. The telephone number 212-757-3318. And you know, are you going to march in the parade?
Well, I believe we're up at the Hotel Pierre on Fifth Avenue. Wouldn't that be wonderful? But
you could fall out of bed.
Going for a block or two. I'm sure it's difficult to get to become a part of the parade, but we'll certainly follow it if we can.
And in fact, you can stay in your pajamas and look out the window if you're in the Pierre, let me tell you.
Well, we'll be visiting it on the day. We're very lucky. There's a man called Andy Breslin who is actually sponsoring us.
A mutual friend, yeah.
Oh, is he really?
Yeah. Ah, yes.
Oh, that's great, yeah.
And he is sponsoring a bunch of you.
Really, he's footing the bill for a lot of this. The Irish Cultural Centre here in Dublin is sending us out, but the shortfall is being made up by Andy Breslin.
Yes.
So, you know,
and might we say,
a privilege. Yeah.
Absolutely, and you won't go hungry if you're around the Breslins.
Thank you.
Looking forward to seeing you, Michael. Okay.
Thank you. Thanks very much, Adrian. I really appreciate that. Thank you.
Very welcome. And friends, you're listening to Irish Radio Network, USA.